Welcome to the Voices of the West, hosted by Emil Franzi and dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
Hi there, welcome to Voices of the West. We got a couple of great topics to discuss with a great guest, Sherry Monahan. Hi there.
Hello.
Not only are you far better looking than most of the guys we usually have on who write for the Western Writers of America, but you're actually a damn good writer, and we're going to get and talk about two things. A couple of your books, and we also want to talk about the important event that's about to occur in Lubbock, and that is the Western Writers of America Annual Convention. And I'm going to be there, and the question is, I haven't figured out what day yet, because I haven't figured out yet whether Todd Roberts is riding along or not. Todd always lets me know about 20 minutes before the meeting. But we had so much fun last time. Yeah, I just got to ask one question, since I bragged about it immeasurably for the last year. Who got the Lariat Award this year?
Who got the Lariat Award?
Yeah,
you would ask me that.
Well, you're supposed to know things like that. By the way, it's probably the best-looking award. And they're all pretty nice, but that one's unreal. I remember bringing that puppy home and hanging it up, and even my wife was impressed. And believe me, that's hard to do.
Well, you know what? What can I say? You deserved it, you know?
Oh, gee. Thank you. No, when I looked at about who had won that in the past, and that's one of the reasons I want to ask you one of this year. I mean, the year or two before me was the University of Oklahoma Press. Well, that's one of the great institutions that's been publishing Western history since I was in college. And I was in college, you know, when there were still, you know, Indians being chased down. In fact, Geronimo hadn't even come in yet.
You are a hoot. That's why I love doing an interview with you.
Well, you know, if nothing else, it says occupation. You know, you have to fill those things out. I always put down entertainer.
I love it. Well, that's perfect because that's how you roll.
No, really. Seriously. I mean, if you're going to do radio, if you're going to do writing, if you're going to do, you know, and I've never gotten a book out, and I'm working on it finally. But I got to tell you, I do have a couple of million words, believe it or not, that have been published by somebody over the years. I probably had about 1.2 million, I figured out, in the old Tucson Weekly back when it was interesting in the 90s. And I once did 152 consecutive issues, and then some dummy lost the copy and busted my record.
I
wanted to get him fired, but he quit before I could, you know, go in and break his legs. But, no, seriously.
Well, that's what he got. You know, you get your comeuppances, I think, right?
Yeah, on that one, you know, what can I tell you? But that was back when writers actually used to get paid well.
Now we have to scrape for every little penny.
I know. I mean, I'm dead serious. Back in the early 90s, a Tucson Weekly cover story paid between $750 and a grand. Well, yeah,
wow.
That's 50,000 readers. That was standard stuff then. Some of the columnists were making $300-$400 a week.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So I'm looking at that like now, and then I'm looking at what they're paying them. I'm going, huh? Well, that's the reason most of your rags forget it, because anybody that knows, and somebody did a column on this. They said people who know how to write and want to make a living at it are no longer working for most of your print publications.
Well, that's probably very true.
They're writing ads. They're in advertising. They're in public relations.
They're in marketing.
Marketing. They're doing all kinds of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the newspapers are down to either very dedicated people or, by and large, a bunch of dregs and slugs who couldn't write if their name life depended on it. And you can tell by the stories. I had a good buddy who was the he's been gone for over 10 years now, close to 15.
Mm.
But he was an anchor man for many years, and he loved in this beautiful deep bass voice of his. And I'm talking about the late George Borazan. And one of his greatest lines was, "We are not now brought our news by rooms filled with ignorant children."
Wow.
Well, anyhow.
That's amazing.
Let's get on to what's going to be happening in Lubbock.
Okay, well, I cannot believe I just looked at my calendar, and I am stunned to realize that it's a little more than 2 weeks away.
Yeah, how about that? I think I better send the check in and tell you I'm coming. I also, I probably ought to get a, I've already looked. I can't get the hotel. I've got to get the one down the road.
Yeah, the Comfort Inn, I think, because the Overton is sold out, but definitely they are, we have our additional convention rate over at the Comfort Inn for anybody else who might be wanting to come.
Any magic numbers I have to give them, or can I just say, hey, I'm part of the deal over at the Western
Writers of America. That's all you got to say.
All right. Well, and now they're going to, the only thing that scares me now is I didn't think Lubbock was this big, but now I'm looking at it. I'm seeing Texas Tech and all that other good stuff. Never been there. But the Comfort Inn, just let me know that are we going to have to pay to park when I drive over to the other hotel?
I don't think we have to pay for parking at this hotel.
Okay, good. That's the one thing that scared me a little. Not
usually
that it scared
me.
Usually
in big cities you have to pay.
But, I mean, it just cuts into my drinking, that's all.
Well, I hear you. That's what we do at Western Writers of America. We have fun. We share writing stories, and good and bad, and then we go to the bar.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's some of the best bar caucuses you ever want to meet. I mean, Boggs and Lush and... a few others. I hope Cotton Smith makes it, because he's the one guy that's a regular on this show that I've never personally met.
Oh, he is such a wonderful man. I love him. I remember first time I ever met him, my ever first convention, he was the president of the organization. And I rode the airport shuttle with he and his wife, Sonia, and had no idea that I was riding with the president. And I was just awestruck that I had that rare opportunity.
And now you've got that gig.
Yeah, now I'm the president. I would have never in a million years guessed that.
but no, Cotton's a great writer, and this one of the things about Cotton Smith's books, the horses are characters by themselves. Have you ever noticed?
Oh, yeah, they are.
I mean, most of the time, too many writers treat the horse in a Western like furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Or like some people treat the gun. No, he reached for the Colt. Nah, not Boggs. They'll give you a two-paragraph description of an Evans carbine. But you move over to the way Cotton does it, and he got on the bay, and then it goes through a two-paragraph discussion of the personal history of the horse. It's wonderful, and it's what makes these guys different and what makes them great writers. It really does.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. And speaking of great writers, you got a book coming up.
I do, August. It is called The Cowboys Cookbook.
Now, most people don't understand that cowboys actually can cook.
Well, they can cook, and they love to eat, and they ate some really great food. Not necessarily on the trail. It was pretty basic. But, you know, when they were living on the ranch or when they got to the cattle town, they were eating some really nice food. I mean, the guys, when they would go into Dodge City or into Wichita, I mean, they would go to the fancy restaurants in town. They had a pile of money because they got paid at the end of the trail, and they needed to blow off some steam. They wanted some companionship. They wanted to take a bath and get all that dust off them. Could you imagine the bath water after they got out of it being on the trail for that long?
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't just cheap booze and broads like you see in most of the Westerns.
Nope.
No. That's not realistic at all.
No, not at all.
And you know that if you know anything about Tombstone, mm-hmm. Which was not a cow town, it was, in fact, a mining town.
Yep.
The cow town was Wilcox. By the way, Wilcox was a lot more violent than Tombstone.
Yes, it was.
And a lot of people don't know that till you go
just
back
and Warren
look.
Earp.
Ask Warren how that works. As late as 1905. But and that's another thing. Arizona in the first decade of the 20th century was a hell of a lot wilder than it was back in the 1880s.
That's true. It wasn't just untamed naturally.
No. So anyway, where were we going with that? Oh, yeah,
the food.
We're
talking about the Cowboy Cookbook and what cowboys ate.
Yeah, and the cowboys ate damn well.
They did. I mean, and you and I had talked earlier about the Empire Ranch that was between Sonoyta and Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And that place was started in 1876. And the really interesting thing, there's a whole section about that in the Cowboy Cookbook. And one of the men who started it was a man named Hilbert Hillsop. And he was British.
Right. He's a Brit.
He was a Brit. And so he was the cook for a long time.
The English boys.
Yeah, and so he would make them, he has a journal that he kept, and he would make them custard pudding and scones and Yorkshire pudding. This is what the cowboys were eating in Arizona.
Oh, yeah, and You had Henry Hooker's place, and you had a little later on, you had Texas John Slaughter's place. You had a lot of stuff going there.
Oh yeah.
Particularly with the Vail family came in, and when they took over from the English guys in 75, 76, because the Empire Ranch. Well, I've been on the board of directors of the foundation since 2007, and it's one of my favorite projects.
Oh.
Yeah, you didn't know that.
Exciting.
We spent a lot of time. Have you ever been there?
No, next time I come out there, you're taking me there.
I will. We will take you down, because that is an incredible, first of all, it's an incredible sight, because you're right there on Cienega Creek with these giant oak trees, and you don't think about oak trees and grasslands and all the good stuff that's in that part of Arizona.
Oh yeah,
You're out of saguaros then, babe. You're into a high desert country, and it's not that far away.
No, it's not. I mean, Sonoida has wineries. I mean, that's how lush the land is.
Oh yeah, right. And you get down towards Patagonia and Hereford and all those places down, and you get down into Cochise and Santa Cruz counties. You get some of the most beautiful country in the state of Arizona.
It is. It's really pretty.
And you need. What Sherry was saying, that she'll be on the in the O'Reilly series about Kit Carson.
Yep, I was in the Legends and Lies. I filmed for the whole series, but so far I've only appeared in the Kit Carson show.
Well, I was going to say, you remember who his brother was? Mose Carson.
Oh.
Early resident of Tucson, Arizona, back when it was three shacks and four bars.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Mose Carson was here. Pre-Civil War.
With Tevis.
With Jim Tevis, who wrote the book, that the manuscript, which laid around forever until it was finally published about 1950, Tucson in the 50s, the 1850s. Very seminal document about that particular era in Arizona history that suddenly is becoming popular, and a lot of people are writing about it.
Wow.
How about that? Hang on. We got to grab a break. We'll be back.
Voices of the West will be right back.
Back when the West was very young, there lived a man named Master Sun. He wore a cane and derby hat. They called him Bad Master Sun.
Welcome back to Voices of the West.
That brings back special memories for me, because back when I was in college, there were 52 different Western television series in the three networks we had. So it was good business. You can still look those up now. They're still out there. However, for Western Week and all the rest of that stuff that went on the U of A, we used to all draw a different Western TV character, and I got Bat Masterson, so I had a derby, and I had a little cane, and I had all the rest of the stuff that came with it, and the cross draw, which was a Colt Lightning. In those days, nobody cared. You could wear them on campus with a cartridge belt, okay? Then nobody would panic out and say, So anyway, the Bat Masterson thing really kind of rings twice with me, because I do recall the series with Gene Barry and the glorious days when, again, we didn't have any lawyers on TV except maybe Perry Mason, but we sure as hell had 52 cowboys.
Hey.
And yeah, well, and now we can live off the archive, I suppose. But I'm sitting here looking at what's going to happen at the WWA convention, and I got to get there by 7:30 on Wednesday, because we have this presentation of The Homesman, a reading of the shooting script directed by Kirk Ellis. Well, the script is by... our good friend, Glendon Swarthout.
Yes, it is.
And Miles, how much did Miles have to do with writing that script?
I think Glendon did that, and I know that Miles put out a new version of the book, I think with some commentary in it, but don't hold me to that.
Okay, well, Miles is going to be here on August 12th when we do the annual presentation at the Loft Theater of the Western movie that's been picked for some relationship with what's going on around here, and it's The Shootist,
oh,
which for which he wrote the screenplay.
Yes.
And he's graciously coming over to do the promotion for that for the Empire Ranch Foundation.
Wonderful.
And we'll be talking about that. And what I will be also doing while I'm there is promoting as many Southwestern authors as coming to the November roundup that we have at the Empire Ranch, where it's a big event where it's kind of like a big Bruegel painting, only everybody's a cowboy. And what happens is all this good stuff goes on at one time, and we have an authors section where for $25 you can bring all the books you want and see how many of them you can sell.
So, I might have to come to that with my new cowboy cookbook.
Yeah, I think you'd sell a lot of cowboy cookbooks because we get 2,000 or 3,000 people, and if nothing else, I'll probably buy you dinner again.
I'll take that.
Same. We may have to do it in Sonoyta, though, because the thing won't break up until 4 or 5. But it's a lot of fun. It really is. And, we should all have at least one nonprofit we like to mess around with in our old age, and that's mine.
That's awesome.
So anyhow, but The Homesman is what was made into a movie with
Tommy Lee Jones,
and unfortunately didn't go anywhere. The marketing of it suffered somewhat, I thought.
Yeah. But it should be fun. I mean, I'm actually going to be playing one of the characters.
You are?
I am.
Well, you can handle that.
I'm going to be one of the crazy ladies.
Yeah, because it's about a bunch of crazy ladies that are being taken from the West back East. It's an interesting concept. I didn't get to see the movie because I blinked, and it was no longer around. So I guess I'm waiting, you know, to hopefully it'll show up in a theater where you can really see it.
But it probably will. And to be honest, I didn't see the movie. I read the book.
Aha.
And our director, Kirk Ellis, who is an Academy Award winner, who wrote the John Adams series and Into the West.
And that is a glorious series, by the way.
Yes, it was. And so we're very blessed to have him. It was his idea to do this, and everybody's just so excited about it. So it should be a ton of fun. So I am going to be playing, and he had said to everybody, okay, if you've seen the movie, try not to be the character in the movie. Make it your own. And I was like, well, I don't have to worry about that because I didn't see the movie. But
go.
I get to play Arabella Sowers. I'm the woman who carries her doll around and just says, goodbye.
Well, here's who's in it. C.J. Box, Annie Hillerman, Craig Johnson, Mark Hall Patton, Thomas Cobb, Chris Enns, Kat Martin, Kirk Ellis, Lucia St. Clair Robeson, Paul Andrew Hutton, and David Morrell. Now, if you know anything about Western authors, I should have named at least three or four that you've heard of, folks.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, you're not paying attention. You don't listen to the show enough. We've probably interviewed, let's see, how many of those people have been on here? 1, 2, 3, 4. I won't name which four. Here's the deal. I got to leave here early enough on Wednesday morning to make sure I'm checked in and driven over by 7:30.
Yeah, you don't want to miss that. That's going to be
631 miles, it says here. It's supposed to take 9.5 hours. How fast can you go when you hit New Mexico?
You better start now, Emil.
Well, the Arizona part's easy. You can do a nice, easy 83 or so all the way from here to the New Mexico line.
Nice.
And
well,
I don't
make sure you're there.
How does New Mexico handle their speeding tickets anyway?
Nope. Mm,
they're pretty lax. My daughter almost got one.
Almost got one. I love it.
Okay, what about Texas?
Don't mess with Texas.
Yeah, not
there's not
there.
A lot of Texas though, because once you hit the New Mexico Texas line, you're not that far from Lubbock.
They don't have that saying for nothing. Don't mess with Texas, okay, Emil?
All right, okay. And I'm not even going to ask about the concealed carry laws. That's what else is for.
You're good to go on all routes there.
Okay. All right.
All reciprocal. You should be good to go, right?
All right. Thursday, June 25th. What else have we got coming?
Thursday is when we have our annual homestead auction. And we raise money for the Homestead Foundation, which helps promote the Western literature. And we have some, I've been looking on our Facebook page,
mm-hmm.
and there are some amazing, amazing items. There is a beautiful badge one of our members brings and donates. Another one has this gorgeous belt buckle that is custom made just for the convention location. And, you know, we have some really great stuff. So, and that's a lot of fun. And then, let's see, Friday night, we have something that we've never done before, and it's going to be a big deal. We are going to be having, every year we award a Hall of Fame award, and we've done that for a number of years, and this year, for the first time, we're going to have a beautiful Hall of Fame induction for all of the members, and we're trying to get as many members there as possible at the Ranching Heritage Center. We're going to have a dinner. We're going to have music by Andy and Emily Wilkinson and Ian, John Chandler and Jim Jones, and it should be a blast.
That looks cool. Well, I'm sure if I leave on Wednesday morning, I can make it to that one.
I would like to think so.
I would think I could do Thursday night because I noticed the Homestead Dinner and Auction, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday, we get down to...
That's the big night where we give away our Spur Awards.
7 to 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a neat panel called Writing About Buffalo Soldiers.
Oh,
and there's another neat one called Writing About the Alamo,
mm-hmm.
which, with all deference... There are some high spots, and I've been going back and forth with Boggs and Blake and a couple other guys on Texas Rising. Parts of it are quite admirable, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Parts of it drag a little, okay?
Oh, okay.
You haven't watched that, huh?
I haven't. I've been recording it, but I haven't watched it yet.
I got through the first three. The second one, it gets a tad repetitious. But
okay.
I just wrote this back to Boggs, so let me see what you think about my theory. My theory is everybody's saying things, it's got too many characters. And I went, well, you know what? If this was staffed by John Ford about 1962 and we had the whole damn stock company playing 15 or 20 different people, we'd slobber all over it because we know every one of them from Hank Warden, you know, to Victor McLaughlin. However, in this case, all the people playing these characters we are totally unfamiliar with are actors we're totally unfamiliar with, and we don't know what to expect.
That is true.
And part of the glories of the old, and it wasn't just, John Ford was the only one with a stock company. I wrote about the Glenn Ford stock company.
Mm.
Yeah, well, look, real close. How many times is, I'm trying to think of his name. He was a dentist, and he always played the judge. And in Common Charles, I remember he has a great line where he says, well, we're going to have to figure out how to do this legal and proper. But if not, I guess we're just going to have to do it illegal and improper.
Oh, I love it.
Remember who that was? He always played the judge. And he was really great. And he sort of backdoored into being a Western character actor. But anyway, all those kind of characters. Jack Elams of the world, okay?
Okay.
Well, some of these guys may be just as good. How the hell do we know? We've never seen them before.
That's true. We just don't know. They could be budding, you know, Western stars. If
right. We're
going to
have to make
anymore.
About 42 movies with them so they all develop. See, not only did the stars like Wayne and Stewart and those guys have their own persona, but the grunts had their own persona.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made those movies so wonderful is you knew these guys are going to be playing. You know, Jack Elam played Jack Elam how many times?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the ultimate trivia question. About Western movies, if someone can answer this, how many times did Jack Elam get shot in a movie?
Good question.
I don't know.
Maybe
somebody
will call you.
I've got him for 126 roles.
Wow.
Well, come on. He starts off in the 40s. It goes all the way up to the 70s.
Ow.
And there's that wonderful scene at the beginning of... Once Upon a Time in the West, where he's with the fly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that thing, Take It to the Bank, it's one of the most hilarious things ever been done in a movie. All you're doing is Jack Elam is doing a parody of Jack Elam.
Okay, Edgar Buchanan?
Edgar Buchanan, thank you. I don't know why I couldn't think of that. But he was part...
Uncle Joe. I remember him from Uncle Joe and Petticoat Junction.
Bingo. Well, he was part of... He's in 17 Glenn Ford movies or something like that.
Wow.
Because he, well, he was also Peter's godfather, and Peter was one of his pallbearers.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so I know how close the family was with them, and having talked to them before, we had Peter in here when we did 310 to Yuma as the Empire Ranch summer movie.
Oh, pretty cool.
Yeah, which we shot around here and down in on part of what is the Empire. Because the nice thing about the Empire Ranch or the Hooker Ranch or any of those is you can claim half the state was once part of the ranch. Because it probably was.
It probably was.
Because those things were huge. They don't realize how many acres it took of Arizona to feed one cow.
That's right. Talk about your grazing rights.
Yeah. All right, I got to grab a break because I'm, you know, getting Harry flashing at me. So
uh-oh, we'll, don't let him flash you.
Hang on, we'll be right back. He don't let him flash that way.
I left my love, my love, I left the street train in McLaren. I turned my back on my true love when fire from Johnny Red. I left my love a letter in the holler of the tree. I told her she would find me in the U.S. Cavalry.
Voices of the West will be right back. Welcome back to Voices of the West.
Hi there, welcome back. And speaking of Voices of the West, we have a strong one in Jerry Monahan, President of Western Writers of America. We're talking about what's going to happen in Lubbock the end of this month. By the way, if anybody wants to just kind of hop in a car or hop on an airplane and show up in Lubbock, you're going to be welcome. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. You don't need to be a member. You don't even need to be a writer. You just want to come and see what it's all about. Register when you get there.
Yeah. And Emily, what is the full registration for this puppy?
I believe, hold on, we changed it from last year. I don't want to misquote. So hold on 1 second and I will tell you exactly what it is. And then I have a question, a trivia question for you.
All right. I probably will blow it, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. It's $180 for non-members.
Okay, how much?
And that gets you to all the panels. And then if you want to do some of the meal events, those are a little bit add-on extra.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll check the email. I'm just finally figuring out what day I'm going to be able to make it there, because I figured if Roberts makes it, Roberts makes it. And if not, well, I'll drive 631 miles all by myself, and I'll just be so lonely.
Solitary road trip.
I know. I'm just me and my CD player.
All right. So here's my question to you.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you know what the words sop, lick, sinkers, and whistleberries mean?
No, I don't. That's easy.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you. Sop was nothing more than gravy. This is cowboy lingo.
Okay.
They called gravy sop.
Okay.
They called molasses or sorghum lick.
Okay.
They called biscuits sinkers. And, well, can you guess what whistleberries were?
I better not try.
Beans.
Okay, that's where I wasn't going to go there.
But I did.
I know. Well,
but
you
the
always
Cowboys had their own.
You
language.
Always were a kind of gutsy broad. You know what can I
yeah,
say?
Yeah, you know.
Any
had to run with the big dogs, I guess sometimes. But they had their own lingo. It was really quite fascinating.
And you've put this in your book.
I did. There is a whole section in the beginning of the book called Cowboy Vernacular, and it just translates all these cool things. Like cow grease was a slang name for butter.
Uh-huh.
So are there recipes in there, too?
There are lots of recipes. There's over 130 recipes in the book.
And when does this come out?
Lots of fun stories, some good pictures.
When does this come out?
August 3rd.
All right, I got to get it.
Well,
I will get you a copy.
So there.
So
all right.
Done.
Now it's my turn to ask you, Madam Head Mama of Western Writers of America, define a Western.
A Western is mm-hmm. any story, whether it's contemporary, historical, fiction, nonfiction, children's, screenplays, anything, a story that is set in the American West.
Well, it can go beyond being set in the American West.
The American frontier.
Or we wouldn't consider Quigley a Western.
Well, that's true.
It can be in Western Australia.
That's Western Australia.
It can be in Mexico.
As long as there's, it either is set in the American West or there's cowboys, you know, the cowboy element, you know, or a desert or the landscape. We often talk about how the landscape is a character itself in Western writing. And so if you have a landscape like in Australia
mm-hmm.
or in Mexico that's very similar to our American West landscape, it's easy to see how you could create a Western type story in that same landscape.
Okay, try this one. As I am working on what hopefully someday will be my book, which is film music composed for Western movies.
Wow.
All right, Dmitri Tiomkin, well-known film composer probably of all time,
okay.
or one of them, certainly. Tiomkin was a Russian boy. Actually, he was Ukrainian. And he was asked, how do you do these beautiful scenery of the American West and have the music just match it perfectly? Answer, a step is a step.
That's pretty easy.
Think about it.
A step is a step.
Yeah, what does it look like over there? What does it look like over here? It kind of looks the same when you...
Pretty much.
Yeah, right. You know, you got nice mountains in the background and all the rest of it. So,
pretty much.
So some of it's a matter of adaptability. What was the name of that guy we had on from Wales?
Gary, and I can't remember his last name.
Was it Dobbs?
Gary Dobbs.
Okay, I'm trying to get the guy to sign up because he listens to this show, and if you're listening now, Gary, it's good to hear from you. He's in Cardiff. He's a Welshman.
Ooh, Cardiff by the Sea?
Cardiff by the Sea, Wales, and he is an author of both mystery and Western novels.
Okay. Well, if you're listening, this is the president of WWA, and I encourage you to join.
And he got a hold of us and said he listens to this show on podcasts.
Awesome.
Well, we thought so we put him on for an hour. And we yacked about all kinds of good stuff. First of all, one of the things, I got to do this one, because do we still have that clip somewhere?
Yeah, it's in one of our promos.
It's in one of our promos. Well, I asked him during the course of the discussion if the Welsh felt the same way about the Brits that the Scots kind of did. And I can't remember. Can you find that one, Harry? We're going to play the quote back to you. It's wonderful.
Okay,
but one
cool.
of the questions I asked him was, what do you think makes up a Western? Because here's a guy who I don't think has ever been in the United States, has he? No, he never has, but he's still writing Westerns. And he gave us a beautiful answer. And the answer was, basically, he addressed the value system that's presented in a real Western.
Well, that is true. Just good old-fashioned values.
And the net result is there are movies that call themselves Westerns that aren't.
Okay. I've got that clip ready to go here on the question that you asked.
Hit it, because Sherry's going to love it.
Voices of the West, hosted by Emil Franzi.
Gary Dobbs, all the way from Wales. How did you ever find us?
I'm always browsing for anything Western related, and I came across the podcast.
It occurs to me that there's a lot of similarity between the people of Wales and the frontier people of the Old West.
I think there's a lot of truth in what the gentleman said. If the English is awesome, only we didn't do as good job as you guys did.
Saturdays at 4 on AM 1030.
Yeah, he basically said, I asked him about that. He said, well, he honored us because we kicked their ass. And he celebrates the 4th of July every year in honor of America getting rid of the English. I thought it was absolutely wonderful.
I love it.
And he hit it right out of the park, I thought, when we asked him what a Western is. He understands that better than a lot of people who are publishing novels in this country who live west of the Mississippi River.
No comment.
Yeah, really. So that's why I pitched him. I thought he ought to be a member of WWA.
He should.
And is that a wonderful accent?
It is. It's, you know, it's really funny. I got an email from a man in England, speaking of England, last week, and he said, I just found Western Writers, and I'm working on a 3-book series, and, you know, I'd love to know about your organization. And we emailed a couple of times, and I said, well, I know it's last minute, and I know you're in England, but you know what? We're having a convention at the end of this month. And he said, it's not too much. I think I'm coming.
Great.
Just like that.
Great. Well, you know, and we've got the Germany and Switzerland and England, all these places, so they look their own version of what's old Tucson out here, where we shot all those wonderful movies from about 1940 on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've all got their little Western towns spread in England and Germany and France and all the rest of it. And the tourist business down in Tombstone is just incredible, particularly when you know how phony most of Tombstone really is.
Yeah.
But, oh, well, it brings in Germans and they spend money, so what the heck?
What the heck?
Well, and they built a little town on the outside of town that probably went under. But at any rate, most fascinating that the amount of interest that the Europeans and different countries have in our West.
Fred, oh, I know.
In fact, more so than we do in some places.
In some places, that's true.
But anyway, it's good. The other argument we've had about is, and this is interesting because Boggs, and I'm on the same page as Boggs on drawing the line somewhere on what a Western is, and that is that a Civil War movie like Gettysburg is not a Western. It's a Civil War movie.
It's about the Civil War, exactly.
Unless it gets west of the Mississippi.
Well, there you go.
Which takes care of horse soldiers.
Yep.
So even though it had John Wayne, it was directed by John Ford, it had all the John Ford stock companies, it is still a Civil War movie until they figure out how to get out the other side of the river.
And then it becomes a Western.
Then it becomes a Western. Yeah, we let that one go. And the other argument was about Justified.
Oh.
I know, tough call. I was with Johnny, who said, wait a minute, it's Kentucky. Come on, give me a break.
And that is true.
Except yeah, he was overruled when Western Writers of America, I believe, gave it an outstanding award for TV series as a Western about 3 years ago.
Well, that was on the American frontier because Kentucky was the West at one point. So was Indiana.
Yeah, so was upstate New York.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Trey, I got to take the final break. Hang on.
Sunshine and shadow, from darkness till noon, over mountains that reach from the sky to the moon, a man with a dream that will never let go, keeps searching to find El Dorado.
Voices of the West will be right back. Welcome back to Voices of the West.
And by the way, Sherry, we just came back in the classic Made in Tucson TV series, A High Chaparral, which was shot pretty exclusively out at Old Tucson and the confines of this particular valley. Great piece of music. A gentleman, I don't think he can make it to Lubbock, but he's a regular on this show, is Bunker de France, who's one of the wranglers. Was it 46 or 52 High Chaparrals he's in? I can't remember the exact number, but
wow. I keep forgetting.
Just about all of them. And I recall living in California at the time that show was on the air, and my wife and I used to watch that and cry. We were so homesick. So we finally had, no, we finally had to come back, really.
Oh.
Well, this is home. Okay.
It's a great home.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this, you know, despite all of the problems we have with it, like a hot, muggy July day, or maybe
did you say hot and muggy in Arizona?
Yeah, in the summer. That monsoon month in July, yeah, it gets both.
I live in North Carolina. That's muggy.
Well, okay. All right.
It's muggy for you. How's that? It is true. I was there in monsoon season the first time I ever visited, and I thought, what the heck?
That's about the only time, although it's been wild this year because this is June 6th and it still really hasn't gotten that hot. We've had a couple of 100 degree days, but that's it. And we just had some drizzles of rain again, which you never see in June around here.
Wow.
Yeah. So it may be climate change. Climate supposed to change? I mean, isn't a climate change kind of a redundancy? Mm-hmm. I won't go there anymore. Promise. Anyway, High Chaparral is a wonderful series, and Don Collier was a regular on there, and he's a good friend of their shows, too. And Don's 87 years old now.
It's also available on DVD, finally.
Yes.
I got the first season.
Very cool.
Attaboy. Great series. And great piece of music. That's back when television
David Rose
didn't have some bozo with a synthesizer modulating chords and calling it music.
David Rose was the composer.
Yeah. Hey, here's one I got to ask you about with 7 minutes to go. Going through what's going on Friday, there's a panel at 2:30. It's So you're married to a writer. How's that working? Now, whose idea was that?
That was sort of mine. And
how'd I know that?
And Kirk Ellis, he sort of put that together. We have some of the wives who are going to be on the panel talking about what it's like living with some of us crazy authors. I don't think we have any husbands up there. I tried to convince mine to come to Lubbock, but he said, oh, no, you're on your own.
Okay. All right. But that one looks like it might be a lot of fun. Seriously, it's the kind of stuff you talk about at these. And this isn't just for writers from a standpoint of the pure fun of it. There's people, you don't have to be a writer to enjoy some of this. I mean, it's really kind of cool.
It is. I mean, it's just sort of, you know, even if you're not a writer and you just attend the panels and, you know, you just get to hear what goes, you know, so many times when I'm doing a book signing, people will come up to me and they say, what was your inspiration? Or how do you do this? Or, you know, what do you do? And this is sort of like a behind the scenes for a reader.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is smart, right? Is it for readers?
Yep.
The writers, some of them are just, you know, too antisocial.
Hey, now.
I know a couple that are that way, don't you? Yes. But seriously, it is for readers very much, as well as writers.
Yeah, I mean, we would love to have people who are readers come out, not only to just, you know, see who WWA is, but to be, exposed to so many of our wonderful authors that are there. You know, it's a great place to meet some of your favorite authors or find some new ones.
Well, also, if you're into the history of Western films, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I always made a comparison between soap opera. I mean, wrote a column on a soap opera, operas both horse and soap, okay, and Italian. And what we have here is one thing Italian opera shares with the Western movie. We're both living off the archive. What a Verdi and John Wayne have in common. They've both been crooked for a while, okay?
And, yeah, exactly.
And we're probably the genre has such a rich history that you don't have time to get through it all. I mean, do you realize how many gun smokes there are out there? 256, 419. Hell, I don't even remember.
It was the longest running.
I have no idea, but it's got to be a lot.
It was a lot. And
it was the longest running season or series.
A series of anything.
Yeah.
And you catch them on the Westerns Channel and you watch those and you say, yeah, they're great. By the way, that had pretty good music to it, too. And mm-hmm. And that whole subgenre of the movie music that went with them all the way back to the 30s, all the way forward through Elmer Bernstein and into Jerry Goldsmith and up in even Texas Rising right now. Has a score by Bruce Broughton. Well, he did Silverado and Tombstone, two of the best movie scores you're ever going to hear.
Wow.
All right, so he's still with us doing that one, and I noticed that, and I put it on the plus side, and we're all probably going to debate that when we get there. The other problem we have with this is we're either so accepting of anything labeled Western that we slobber over crap.
Well, that's
or
true.
We're so picky...
Or it's just the opposite. We're so critical about anything. It's like, oh, that's a horrible Western.
Oh, my God, it's the wrong saddle.
Right. It's the wrong saddle or it's the wrong horse. Or and I'm guilty of that, too. You know, sometimes my husband will say, could we just watch the movie?
Well, yeah, the guy who used to beat me up on that is our good friend Michael F. Blake. You probably ran into him a couple times along the way. Got some great books on film. On films, and I don't know if he's going to make it or not. He's actually been working steady on the weekends, so I don't think we're going to see him this year.
But
he's got a job, you know, Hollywood.
Got to pay the bills.
Pay the bills well, but Michael's taught me try looking at this as entertainment because I used to be one of those guys that was so picky. That's the wrong gun, you know. And he got to me on Tombstone, and he finally said, Franzi, look, forget the red silk scarves and all that crap. It's entertainment.
Yep.
And how good does it do of giving you a general view of what really happened and quit whining about the little stuff? And I thought that was a good point. I really do. And Michael really kicked me in the ass on that one a few years back and turned me around.
And it's true. I mean, if you can get people interested in it, if they see a movie or a TV show, like even like Legends and Lies, even though there's some definitely issues with that show,
yeah,
get people to go out and read.
I'm glad you made the gig, but I got to tell you, I'm not going to go there on a couple of those, okay? Just out of deference to my...
I'm with you. Totally with you.
Yeah, you know where we're at on that one, Bill, baby.
But if it inspires people to go out and read Western books, then that's great. That's what we want.
Well, my good friend Scott Dyke, who talks about the Wyatt Earp stuff a lot, and Custer, but particularly Wyatt Earp, says, okay, Francie, try this one. The next time you're talking to a service club or something about Earp, ask them one question. How many of you have read Frontier Marshal, the most common book out there on Wyatt Earp? How many have seen Tombstone? And if you're in a room full of 50 people, you're going to get two people who read the book and 35 have seen the movie.
So true.
He said, you got to take them from where they're at, and where they're at is where Hollywood parked them.
Oh, that's so true. Scott is so smart.
and brilliant observation. See, when you get to be as old as me, you don't learn quick, but you learn good.
I like that.
I stole
it. I'm going to steal that from you.
Go ahead. I stole it from somebody else. Or as Kipling said, when Omer smote his blooming liar.
Oh.
Actually, I ripped that off from Jesse Marvin Unruh, the former Speaker of the California Assembly back in the 50s.
Wow.
But he was a Texas boy, so it's okay.
So it's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, seriously, that's what you got to do. You got to take people from where they're at. And if this stuff makes you interested in the West so you'll go back and read something else or see something else or do something else, it served its purpose and don't pick on it.
Exactly.
That's where I finally came down.
Good.
And I'm not going to bitch about the saddle anymore. The gun, maybe, because there's no excuse. The Guineas have made enough copies.
All right, look, June 23rd. We didn't give the date for the convention. June 23rd through the 27th.
Thank you. We got to do that. That's this month. And that's why the kid's got to get his act together in Lubbock, Texas, which looks like it's going to be absolutely fascinating. Thank you for being with us, ma'am.
Thank you for having me. It's a joy as always.
And when your book comes out in August, we'll talk about it some more.
You betcha.
You got it, babe.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Voices of the West.